Continuation of the summary of Atonement and Eucharist.
It's on this walk to Emmaus, isn't it, 46, line 5, that it is said in the last chapter of Luke's Gospel that he opens their understanding that they might understand the Scriptures. And from Moses to the prophets, he explains in all the Scriptures the things concerning himself. That is, from Egypt to Babylon. The wiping out of the myth of the birth-death cycle by reason, or, if you like, wiping it out with truth and love. Perhaps with truth, life, and love. Anyway, wiping it out with the science, with divine science, that science which shows that all there is to him is that which comes out from the principle as origin, returns to the principle, and never leaves the principle. This is what is signified by the terms truth and love. So it made their hearts burn within them. And here in the text, it is the divine spirit which is speaking. It is speaking through, and this is the first time the text has used this term word, the first sight of the holy city. It is spirit speaking through the inspired word. Now, therefore, all there is to the Bible, the Scriptures, is spirit voicing its own word. It's spirit declaring, I am. Everything in being, in the universe, is spirit declaring, I am. This is the word of spirit. And through this, he explains to them what has happened that to eliminate this belief of a womb at one end of the scale and a tomb at the other end. Yes, it's all spirit. In the next paragraph, starting line 13, you get the three references to spirit, physique, not spirit, corporeality and spirit, the understanding of spirit. Understanding rising higher, understanding of spirit rising higher and higher, until finally the ascension. Where does it say the ascension? It says on line 15, yes, that's right. It must keep on telling us that his body was not changed. It was the same body until he himself ascended, or in other words, rose even higher in the understanding of Spirit God. He's not risen anywhere. Spirit is here. And the only thing that is here, and by reason of this understanding of spirit, the last vestige of the belief in separateness has disappeared from consciousness. Truth and love, which is spirit, all belief in separateness has gone. He hasn't gone. It's that belief that's disappeared. And that's the ascension. And so the way has been marked out on line 25 for all men. For all men. It is a world happening. And therefore we get the Pentecost once more. that his students received the Holy Ghost. They were roused to an enlarged understanding of divine science. A faint conception. Isn't this true of us at this moment? An enlarged understanding of divine science? A faint conception of the life, capital L, which is God? No longer measuring man by material sense? Leaning no longer on matter, but on principle? And therefore, healing. The personal sense of separateness has yielded to the totally inclusive understanding, to the understanding that being is one and indivisible. Now, because it's a world happening, we must see what has been at work. That when it comes to the ascension is totally eliminated from consciousness. In other words, we've got to see these different aspects of Jesus' enemies. And the first one is Judas, but Judas, not a personal proposition at all. Judas is the world's ingratitude, which he has to prove the unreality of. It is this greed for 30 pieces of silver and the smiles of the Pharisees that he was in no danger of. No danger from salary or popularity. No. Therefore, it is this salary business and this popularity that is the root of the error, the root error. The traitor's price was 30 pieces of silver and the smiles of the Pharisees. It's this desire to get, and having got, get more. Whereas the fact is that if there's only one life, and that life is not cut up into lives, that not one of us possesses a life of his own, but we are life, capital L. And there we are in no danger from salary or popularity. And so there's this great gulf between Judas and Jesus. But it isn't a personal gulf. On line 23, you see that it's simply the world loving a lie better than truth, so that all there is to Judas is a lie, and all there is to Jesus is truth, capital T. Therefore, the lie must fall. It falls to the ground. It's the lie of fallen man. That's what he is eliminating from consciousness, is the lie of fallen man. Truth eliminates the lie of fallen man, because man is unfallen in truth. The part cannot depart from the whole. And we come to the garden. Gethsemane glorified, the oil press. It's where the pure essence of manhood is being pressed into expression. His students slept. Well, this is fallen man. This is the deep sleep. This is the myth-infested unconscious, the deep unconscious, the Adam dream. And this is what he is having to handle. As he holds uncomplaining guard over a world. His students slept, but that's a good thing. because it means he turns forever away from earth to heaven. He turns from sense to soul. No more reliance on anything outside. No good relying on anything outside. So he turns to soul, where everything is inside. Now he's got everything in its true identity. Not in its false identity, but in its true identity in soul. What he seems to be experiencing is sin's revenge, line 14, on its destroyer. What is the destroyer of sin then? We get it on line 14, 15, truth and love again. This is the ninth time truth and love is used in the chapter. It's truth and love which is the destroyer of sin. We don't have to even ask why. We can see why. We know now why it is truth and love that is the destroyer of sin, suffering, separation, and so on. So he doesn't use the world's weapons. He doesn't use the world's means of defense. What does he use? He uses the weapons on line 20 of truth and love, and the means, and truth and love's means of defense. In other words, he opens not his mouth. If he opened his mouth in protest against error, it would be real. Truth and love opened the tomb. It rolled the stone from the tomb and opened the mouth of the tomb. But that was because he opened not his mouth. There was only truth and love. It was all spirit, all soul. So it's a question of put up your sword. What does all this amount to? The bottom of 48. Just sheer ignorance. That's all. It's all a matter of ignorance of truth. Pilate is ignorant of what truth is. And that's the only thing that we have to contend with, really, is ignorance of truth on the one hand, understanding truth on the other. But the women at the cross weren't ignorant of truth. See, that ignorance of truth is a bloodless, lifeless, pallid thing. But knowledge of truth, the understanding of truth, is just life itself. The true knowledge of God. So the women knew what truth was. There was no ignorance there, the woman's state of thought. And it knew it because its devotion was inspired, its faith was winged, its eyes, the eyes of understanding were opened, and that was truth. The sick healed, that's truth. In that, truth is seen. And as we come down 49, we come to all these superlatives. He is working as the highest instructor of man. He is charged with the grandest trust of heaven, at the highest post of power, the highest proofs of divine power, because he is operating on line 31 from the standpoint of the Most High. Because of that, on line 21, it is spirit. Spirit is transforming because it's renewing. And on line 23, again, this combination, truth, life, and love. This absolute unity of truth with life, with love. The wholeness of truth, that is life deathless. That is love all-inclusive. So he's at the highest point of power. But the scoffers say, would turn aside the right of a man from the face of the Most High. What is the right of a man? The right of a man, the right of each one of us, is to be face to face with the Most High. To come out from the principle, from the capitalized terms, the Most High. It's only to be starting out from, with, and as the capitalized terms, to be face to face with the Most High. Isn't that true? And on 50, line 3, who shall declare his generation? His birth, which means who shall decide what truth and love are, little t, little l. So what is it that is being born? What is his generation? It is truth and love itself, giving birth to itself as truth and love. Truth and love, capital T, capital L, generating, ceaselessly generating, truth and love, little t, little l. Therefore, the lamb is not slaughtered, not really. The male lamb is not slaughtered, and the female sheep is not shorn, because he opens not his mouth. And the other reference to opening not his mouth was back on 48, wasn't it? And again, there it was truth and love. It was truth and love that caused him not to open his mouth. It is here truth and love generating itself to be truth and love, so that he doesn't have really anything to fight against. Therefore, the lamb is not really slaughtered and the sheep is not really shorn. But to human sense, my goodness, now the last cry. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? And we read the science at the back of that, on line 12, 13, 14, and so on, that the appeal of Jesus was made both to his divine principle, the God who is love, and to himself, love's pure idea. Why hast thou, divine principle, love, expressed as your idea of yourself, which is me, divinely? Why have you forsaken me humanly? Why does it seem as if there is this break, this separation between what I am divinely and what I seem to be humanly? Now, in order to answer that, the three terms on line 14, life, truth, and love, are required. Because in life, truth, and love, what I am divinely, what I am humanly are one. And it is impossible for what I am divinely to forsake what I am humanly. One is the expression of the other. And so, life, truth, and love abide in him individually by reflection, as he abides in them as an individual part that can never be torn apart from the whole. And therefore, that hour on line 17 of birth is not shorn. The sheep is not shorn. That hour of birth, of its mighty blessing for the human race. So, for the human race, it is true for the human race, this. This is the mighty blessing for the human race, is that it is the truth about the human race. Now this is, as we come down to 50, the marginal heading, this is divine science understood. Do you see that? This is divine science understood. This is, line 17, the full recognition of eternal life not giving way for one moment before the evidence of the bodily senses. This is divine science understood. Divine science misunderstood is simply the evidence before the bodily senses. That's all there is to the evidence before the bodily senses. Divine science misunderstood. So, on line 26, the burden of that hour of world birth, was terrible beyond human conception. The real cross which Jesus bore up the hill of grief was the world's hatred of truth and love. What is this cross, then? It's the world's hatred of truth and love, the utter inseparability, indivisibility of all things in truth, held in the embrace of love. That's body. Isn't mortal body and the cross the same thing, really? Don't you bear it up in the morning, satisfy its appetites all day long, take it for a walk, put it to bed, bear it, bear it, bear it. Can we bear it that all there is to the mortal body is the world's hatred of truth and love? Can we bear to acknowledge that? We've got it if we do in a form that we can deal with it. Because truth and love is therefore the answer. In truth and love, and the relationship of truth and love, which is true body, lies the answer. And this is what he understood.